All right, we're good? All right, we're going to get started, guys and gals. At least I didn't have the 9 a.m. slot after the attendee party. Sorry, Tim. We got a lot of ground to cover. I've given this presentation a couple times before and to user groups, and it went 2 hours and 45 minutes. So I am what is standing between you and lunch. So I will try to make this as brief as possible because we only have 1 hour. So I'm Scott Stanfield, and you are in HTML5 for Skeptics. Thanks for coming. I appreciate it. I think this is officially the smallest room at Mix. So there are some seats here. Given the current rate at which people are coming in, you guys might need to slide in because I do have a feeling this might there might be a lot of people here. So let me tell you what I'm going to cover, and this would be a good time for you to decide if you want to stay. It's most of those things. I'm going to talk about browsers and specs and statistics. I'm talking to you about HTML5 from a strategic perspective. I mean, it's clear that we need to be doing this because everyone saw the keynotes just like I did. But I want to give you some thinking about how I've come across this space. The reason I call this HTML5 for Skeptics, there's a magazine I used to subscribe to called The Skeptical Inquirer. Michael Shermer's the editor. He's also now a contributing editor to Scientific American. And the perspective of a skeptic, it's not a cynic. I know there's some of you that are cynical about HTML5, but being a skeptic is having an open mind and approaching new topics. And I don't want to convince you to do HTML5 because, frankly, if you're not working in Vertigo, then you might be my competitor. So I'm going to try to stay neutral. I don't want to, there's plenty of evangelism that's going on at this conference that will try to convince you to do this. What I'm going to do is give you my perspective and how I got to this spot. So my company is Vertigo. Now, if you've been coming to Mix for the past few years, you may have seen a couple projects that we've done. We've had a lot of success with Silverlight. We did the the Democrat National Convention and the swearing in with Silverlight, which was live, and I think for the first time in HD. We just did a project for Jay-Z recently, also in Silverlight in partnership with Bing. We did a little sporting event called the Olympics, and you may remember the Hard Rock memorabilia. These were all projects that we could not have done without Silverlight, and I think they had a really good impact. And how many of you are Silverlight developers today? Okay. Thank you for coming. In addition to doing Silverlight, I mean, there's a good chance you were doing something before, either WPF or before that, maybe web development, when it was called HTML, or just HTML4, which has been around since 1999. So it's been a while since we've had an upgrade. But before we were doing this, like, my company is about 14 years old. Oh, well, we didn't win a Grammy, or an Emmy, but we might in a month, by the way, so we'll find out. We're up for 3 Emmy nominations. With Silverlight, we get Emmy nominations. With HTML5, I'm not so sure. This was actually our first HTML project. And if you came up through VB6 and NT doing transactions and database work, doing early web development, before .NET, it was called Windows DNA. This was a sample app that Mike and I built for Microsoft. Called back then, the Duwamish, and that was before Duwamish, and it was before some of the other sample apps. It was called Fitch and Mather Stocks. So FM Stocks was fictitious. The site is actually still around, and someone actually got it to compile recently. So we've all collectively probably been doing web for a while. So what's the big deal now? What's the big rush? So the problem is this term has taken on a life of its own. And if you're very specific about it, I mean, HTML is a semantic markup language with syntax and new structures. There are other things around the space, like CSS3 and web fonts, geolocation, which aren't technically part of HTML5. But it's part of the buzz of the whole HTML5 space. So I think the way we take a look at this is by taking a short history. So how many of you remember your statistics in math? This is the normal distribution. And it became, if you look at that sigma, -2 sigmas around between where it says 2.1% and 13.6. Oh, wait, I don't want to trust the laser pointer. That little gap, if you have a business background, you might recognize that gap. It's called the chasm. Crossing the chasm. And this is a technology life, a technology adoption concept where if a new technology is able to make it past the innovator stage and the early adopters, which I'm sure a lot of you are here, and cross that chasm, it's going to take on a life of its own. And I have a theory. I think we crossed that chasm on January 27th, 2010, with HTML5. So a little bit more than a year ago, and this was not at Mix. There was actually an event in New York City. That's where Steve Jobs unveiled the iPad. So what does the iPad have to do with HTML5? Well, if you guys saw the keynote, there's a point where he went to the New York Times, and there was a little Lego brick. Do you guys know what that brick is? It's Flash. It's a missing plugin. So in one day, Adobe killed Flash, threw the plugins under the bus. And I'm thinking, if there's no Flash on the iPad, there's probably not Silverlight. So this started this whole background, this back and forth conversation between Apple and Adobe. So Adobe's sitting here thinking, oh man, there's no Flash. And especially when Jobs came out and said, yeah, Flash sucks, it's slow, memory hog, the batteries, look, poor performance, and this is his thoughts on Flash. And then Adobe comes back, say, hold on, we really like you guys. We make a lot of money selling our tools to your crew, and Apple shot back with that. Not literally, that was from John Gruber's blog, but you get the point. So for the past 3 years, as a Silverlight developer, we've been trying to get adoption, trying to catch up to Flash, and we're about 65%. But we see all this going back and forth. I'm like, what does this mean for us, and what are we going to do? Well, again, Jobs comes in and tells us what we should do. He says, look, you're going to be rewriting all your stuff for touch anyway. If you're going to do it on the web, why don't you use this new thing, this modern technology like HTML5 and CSS and JavaScript? I'm thinking, maybe it's time to look at this again. But who supports HTML5 today? So they came out with a site shortly after to say, hey, it's cool. Even without Flash, we can do HTML5. We have Safari on the iPad, and it looks really good. And then shortly thereafter, Google had their site to proclaim their love for HTML5. And of course, we have Microsoft's site as well, the beauty of the web. So the browser vendors last year were really getting behind HTML5. And Hulu threw cold water on it at first. They've since gone back and said, you know, we're not so sure about this. Let's slow down. In fact, one of the main guys at the W3C, in a kind of infamous tweet, said, you can play around with it, but just be careful, don't expect stability, because it's definitely a work in progress. So what are we supposed to make of all this? Well, on January 18th, about a year later, we have a logo, and we have a badge, and we have a T-shirt. So you know the technology is real when we get a T-shirt. To catch up, next month, on May 2011, is the last call. So the W3C has taken this enormous spec. It's about 800 pages if you print it. And if you go look at the spec, turn on the authoring view, because I doubt, well, there may be some IE9 folks here or IE10 folks here, but most of the spec is kind of split between people creating content and authoring in HTML, and also the user agents, the people creating the browsers. God help you if you ever have to work on a browser. I can't imagine how difficult it is. At least now there's a spec. Before, everyone was back-specking or retro-specking. So they would see what one browser vendor would do something kind of cool, like Ajax, and the others would reverse engineer it, but miss corner cases, and then we have to live with the mess and the differences between browsers, which is really painful, and I'll get to that in a minute. So this is really the skeptical bit. So I mean, I'm running HTML5 browsers, and I'm compatible browsers. I'm sure a lot of you are, but we are not everyone. In fact, I think, this is my number, but if you take the 100% of the world that browses the web and subtract 56% of that, the remainder is 44. Good. I can help you. 44. I think about 44% of the world is ready for this today. And I get this number, remember that 56, I get it from the site called marketshare.hitslinkedin.com. And every time I've given this presentation a few times and updated it, right, you know, literally, these numbers were updated this morning at 7 a.m. So these are very current numbers to one significant digit. So about 56% of the world runs in the Internet Explorer family, which is 6, 7, and 8, and now 9. 9 is just getting started. Right now it's at 1%. You know, wait till the Windows updates start ticking through. That number is going to grow quickly. And 6, hopefully it's on its way down. But this is the way the landscape looks today. So Firefox is in second. Chrome and Safari are growing. The Opera guys, they actually have some really nice innovation in the browser. And they were some of the ones behind some of the early thinking around the HTML5 spec. But this is the reality today. And this is what it's been like for the past, 15 years. So everybody remembers Mosaic and Netscape, and you can see how that big blue square in the whatever that shape is kind of crushed that. there's definitely been some changes. So there was a period of time in 2002 when IE6 had 95% of the market share. And back then, we used to be able to put a little badge on our sites and say, this site best viewed with IE6 at 1024 by 768. We'll never have that day again. Those were the good old days, sort of. We didn't know how bad we were going to have it later, but it was good then because it made the testing permutations a lot easier to maintain. So this is the landscape today, and there's actually more that just didn't make it on the screen. So this is the timeline of web browsers from Wikipedia. It's an enormous file. So when we talk about the big five browsers today, it's not just like there's five things. There's dozens and dozens, and we don't control this. So you can see just in the lower right-hand corner how Google Chrome has come along just in the past 2 or 3 years in the very bottom right. But you can see the lineage of Firefox in the middle and IE at the top. Contrast this with Silverlight. Silverlight, 65%+ of the world runs it. End of story. So when you can punch through and you know that Silverlight's installed, you're home free, pretty much. There's still some testing you need to do the Mac and Windows. But in this space, you have no idea how your content is going to be consumed. And this is a really different, and it's never going to get, well, no, I won't say never. I don't think it's going to be easier for a long time. So a different perspective of looking at HTML5 support. There's a site called caniuse.com, and I refer to this site a lot. And it breaks down HTML5 into very granular components. So there's something called basic canvas, or there's canvas with 3D, or there's canvas, there's like one other piece. And what they do is they try to show you, well, they show you a grid of all the different pieces. I just pick canvas because it's a fairly big identifiable feature. Canvas, audio, and video are all kind of in the same level of support, but you're dealing with about half the world. You hold your applause, please. Check this out. 11% of the world today still uses IE6. Now, if you're in the U.S., it's only 0.6. So you can probably safely assume, if you're building a site today, especially for a U.S. audience, you're cool. Half of that number comes from China. I don't know why. Maybe it's because XP's pirated a lot or something. I told Microsoft they should sell IE9. That's the best way to get it spread quickly through pirates. this is a frightening number. IE6 came out in August of 2001. That's almost 10 years ago. And it's still around. We still have to mess with it. And so, and Microsoft has this site with it's the IE6 Death Watch. And you can see we're at 11.6%, half the world's China, and the rest, you know, it's getting lower. But we're not done because IE7 and 8 are right behind it. So we're going to have to deal. That's the bulk of that 56% number. Subtract 11.6 and subtract 1% for IE9, and you're left with our next big problem. IE7 and 8. And if you think people are going to upgrade their browsers, more than half the world runs Windows XP. So this we're going to be living with this kind of halfway world for a long time. Now, when we talk to our clients about HTML5, first of all, they say, hey, by the way, can you also make sure that site is HTML5 compatible? And throw in an iPad version too. And can it run on Android? I mean, it's literally like that. It's just like a checkbox. They just assume it's going to be ready for HTML5. They have no idea how much additional work and testing we have to do to make sure it's going to work. Because at least with Silverlight, we can try to convince them to upgrade. And with the Hard Rock Memorabilia site, we give you kind of a glimpse of the item you might see if you go through. But you can't go to a site and say, just install an HTML5 browser. I guess you can, but it's a pretty big task to do that. So I think that, in a way, we're just over the past year, I think the plugin has become the browser has become the plugin, and the plugin is a feature of HTML5. I think of Silverlight now in angle brackets, or angle bracket less than greater than, in the sense that if you look at audio and video and Silverlight and other features, you've always had to test to see if it's there or not, and if not, you can install it, but you can't easily prompt a user to install a new browser. So, and for a long time, right now, people are still mostly getting their internet traffic on the desktop, about 95%. And the mobile browser space has doubled in 12 months, but it is 12. It's a 4%. That's fairly significant. One of the things I had a question about when I posted my session, a question about how you might approach HTML5 for mobile. And I didn't, since this talk is very compressed, I didn't get a chance to put it in. But you can see right now, it's at 4%. I think this number, we have a really good chance of getting this bigger, especially as this audience starts to become familiar with HTML5. Now, you're going to learn techniques around media queries, so you can ask the browser how big you are, and it changes the size of your display, your context. And if you use a concept called an adaptive or flexible grid, and as your screen size changes, your content can nicely flow. And there's some good sites that show you examples how to do that. That's how we're approaching it at Vertigo. So again, you can get all this data from HitsLink or go to Rheostats for the current Silverlight numbers. By the way, I just got to add this. On the Silverlight, it's really, that's an older screenshot, but it's actually really good. Flash is kind of fragmented right now across three versions, 10, 10, 10.1, 2, and 3. It probably doesn't have a lot of bearing on the functionality in Flash. But at least in Silverlight, they can push a new version. Like when 5 is ready, someone at Microsoft told me they can pretty much upgrade 80% of the user base in 2 weeks. They just push it forward. Flash doesn't have that ability. So, now that I've thrown cold water on all of this, why are we here? Why do we care? It's for one reason. Because we love new stuff. I do. The 5 has got to be greater than 4. And you can do it today. That's the thing. You can do it today. In fact, if you go to Google and view source, there's the key right there. That's the shibboleth. That's the little phrase you can look to see if someone's thinking about the modern web. And that new doc type is where you start in your learning and your understanding around HTML5. And you can use that, and it'll work in every browser. Let me talk about this for a second. Well, how many of you have gone through the nightmare of making a site work in multiple browsers? Okay. So we came up with a clever term, the browser compatibility strategy. First, the tactic, and this is what we talk to our customers about. You either make your site better as you discover more features, or you degrade as you discover the features aren't there that you want. And there are libraries to show you how to do that, and I'll give you a demo later. The top line is for optimists, and the bottom line is for pessimists. But you have to pick one side or the other. You can't just assume everything's going to be there. And it won't be there for a long time. This is the official site from the W3C, the body that owns the copyright to HTML. They're responsible for HTML5 and all the ancillary standards around the open web. And you can't see the fine print, but it says, this test suite contains 925 tests. That's not enough, and we need your help. After final call, which is next month, if it passes through, the next big phase of the HTML5 world is to create, I think they estimated maybe 200,000 tests. And when two browsers, you can see I have four columns, IE9, that's a release candidate, Chromium, Firefox, and WebKit. When two browsers pass all of those tests at 100%, then we've earned the t-shirt. Then we're done with HTML5. HTML6 will keep going. I mean, that's going to start, I think, in 2 months. But that's the exit criteria, which is really pretty cool. It's just going to be a long time to write these tests. And you guys can contribute. But that is really how you see what browser supports what. And it's a moving target. WebKit's a nightly build, so there will be regression bugs. There's some other sites, the unofficial tests. And I like Can I Use. HTML5 test is dangerous in the sense that if you search right now on Google or Bing for HTML5 test, you'll get this site. And it's a very human readable number. It's a big fat number. You can see in this one build of Chrome, I got 217. My Kindle, I got a 61. I had a screenshot for IE6, and it was like 2. But the problem is, these sites are going to exist, but they cherry-pick the features, and they're not the official tests. So be careful how you interpret these results. Might be good for just to give you a thumbnail of what does what. One of the things that can really help you is when you're talking to a customer, and they want to know what browsers you support. You can't just say, oh, well, we support the major browsers, or IE, Firefox, Mozilla. You can do what Yahoo does. They keep an updated list every quarter called the Class A browsers. There's three classes of browsers. There's the A list, a C list, which you should not worry about anymore, and then X. X is experimental. 0.02% of the web traffic goes over consoles, like a TiVo or your Xbox or the PlayStation. That's an X browser. You probably don't need to worry about that. So this is a technique that we use when we talk to clients. We use the Class A browser list. Okay, so we've talked a lot about the browsers because they're the ones really driving. This is why we're here, because the spec was just bumping along. but it was the people that shipped that made it real back last year, and that's why we're here now. So now I'm going to give you just a brief overview of the semantics and the syntax of HTML5. And I love this. I think a lot of developers love to refactor, and that's what this is about. This is file new HTML in Visual Studio. That's what you get. And I don't know about you guys, but I've never seen that kind of funky syntax at the top with dash and slash slash. I can never remember that. Well, now you can just get rid of it, and it looks like that. IE6 on up, or pretty much everything. It has to do with quirks modes, and a quirks mode is, I think IE9 or 8 ships with like about four different rendering modes depending on how it looks at your HTML and sniffs it out and figures out what it should be doing. This just starts over. We can just go back to this default mode, and this is very nice. Same thing goes with the next tag, the HTML. We can go from that to that. So we're specifying the language for the content. The next one's really important, the meta tag. The browser doesn't really know how to interpret these ones and zeros coming across, so you have to tell it the encoding page to use. In this case, it's UTF-8. There are some potential, and by the way, you can mix case on these. You don't have to use double quotes. You don't have to necessarily close these tags. I said that was the problem with XHTML. Do you guys remember XHTML? That's what the W3C was doing in 2002 to 2006. And they went down this XHTML path of correctness. And they're trying to force us to create pages that were easy for machines to read and interpret and to create a consistent DOM. But the reality was there are trillions of web pages out there. Maybe billions, trillions a lot. But there's a lot of web pages out there that we're not going to go back and fix. And so they would just break. And you would get as soon as you hit your first malform tag, you're done. So HTML5, they just said, forget that. That didn't work. The W3C shut that committee down. They adopted the current body of work from the WTWIG. It's the Web Hypertext what was it? I don't remember. It's a working group. It's where the genesis of this work came from. Anyway, that's how they got rid of it, which is good. Same thing with the link tag. We can simplify. We know at this point that if it's a style sheet, its type is going to be CSS, so we can get rid of the redundant type. And then we tighten up the white space, and we get a nice little template to start with. So this is nice. But this is about all you get in terms of the new syntax. There's new semantics. But at least the syntax is cleaner to start with. On the semantic side, this is meaning. So everyone, you can squint your eyes, and you know what this looks like. It's your header, your nav, the footer at the bottom, and you have some floats to deal with the sections or sidebars and stuff. This is a common layout pattern, a paradigm. Some people parked some web stats they did about 3 or 4 years ago. They went and crawled, I think it actually was Google, but they crawled a ton of websites, and they pulled out the most common class names and just did a histogram ranking of them. I love this one here, the MSO normal. That's what happens when you do file save as HTML from Word. It dumps an enormous style sheet in your page. So that's the histogram, and then they started sorting it and figured, why don't we take the ones that are common, like we see text and content and main a lot. Let's just call it the article. And footer, well, let's just reuse that, and header, between title and header and top, let's just go with header. So these idioms, these concepts that we've come up with that mean nothing to a computer, it's just an ID equals whatever, we've taken those div tags and promoted and gone from this to this. So this is another way to detect if someone's generating semantic-based content. Now, there's a lot more than these. There's probably another 40, I think. And I'm sure a good portion of you guys have blogs. This kind of document layout is really good for text-based content. It doesn't really help us for forms or for applications. And a lot of us in here build web applications. So there's websites and web applications. So a lot of the semantic web, in my mind, is really good for websites and web content. But it's a good place to start. So I don't normally, a while back I was doing no PowerPoint and all demos. And at this point, I just had to like get this stuff organized. And this is really just how I've come through it. So I'll give you guys a quick demo. Okay, yes, I'm running a Mac. I'll just get that out of the way right now. And yes, I'm going to use the command shell. So make that really big and go into my projects folder. And I have kind of a minimal website here set up. So I just have a couple of files. Let me remove index because I'm going to create it. And yes, I'm using VI. I'll be honest with you. So I started using VI in 1988, or 1986 when I got my computer science, entered computer science. This has been the most fun, is going back and rediscovering those pathways through my brain are still there. How many of you use VI? That's a gang sign. How many of you use Emacs? One. Okay. See? It's just one of you. That'll be my next talk at some point. I want to like convince everyone to use VI. I have VI in Visual Studio. I have VI in Chrome. It's what's nice about it is I don't carry a mouse anymore. So when you program in VI, you can keep your hands in the home keys, which is anyway. So this is that template that I showed you earlier. Oh, that is that typeface big enough in the back? It's good enough. Raise your hand if you can't see it, because it's not really high contrast. Okay, so we'll go with this. So what I want to do is create a very simple page using one of the new semantic tags. Okay, so I have a style sheet I need to bring in that's already kind of written for me. So it's, whoops, not style. And I have some kind of snippets. Oh, great. So here I am talking about VI, and I can't remember how to do this. So it's in a subfolder called style. And then down here, I'll create an H1, mix 11 HTML. OK. So let's just open this, make sure everything's sane. No, I don't have my style sheet. CSS style. I already have a bug. You're kidding me. What am I doing here? I tell you, when you're this close to the computer, I cannot be failing on this. So LS CSS style, right? Bang V. Type equals text. Does anyone see the typo here? Oh, href, oh my god. Jeez. Don't listen to any of this talk. If I oh man. And that is not the right page. Unbelievable. That index. Oh, you know what it is too? When you when you leave your hotel room and come back down, your wireless gets reset. Which is what I think the problem is here. Come on. Project's minimal. Unbelievable. Well, that works. So you know I can do something, right? Hold on one second. Okay, I've got 100 of you in the audience. Let's see. So it's... Oh, it's Link. Oh, my Lord. Jeez. How did we not see this? Link. There. Jeez. I'm sorry. We can edit that, right? There. Oh. And I opened the wrong one again. Oh, okay. I need a drink. God. Holy cow. I don't know why I do that all the time. I even write it down right here, and I can't read it. Okay. 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 Stay calm. Stay calm. We're going to go in here. We're going to add this article thing. So this should say, this will be in a red box. Okay, now it's not now in a box because I don't have it styled. So it'll just, that's just an unstyled tag, okay? So my goal is to see how this, to see what the new semantics are gonna allow us to do. So for that, I'll insert a style. And for this article tag, I have to set the display block to block. And the border to, what was it? 5 pixel solid red. Okay. So, actually, let me pick a different color. My favorite HTML5 color? That. It's too bad. It's actually not a great color. It's just this kind of orange. But the badass, man. That's cool. Okay. So, this is a modern browser. Okay, here we are with the latest release of Chrome. Now, here's for my next trick. What will this look like in IE6? So I'm going to launch Windows XP, which is very speedy, by the way. And I need my IP address. And should be done. I'm going to get my IP address while that's coming up. It's 10. Oh, man, yeah, see, it keeps changing. Hold on. 10. Yeah, there's something. There it is, 14.125. Okay. So let me launch XP. I'm sorry, IE6. And change this IP address. 10.72.414.125. And this should give me, yeah, there we go. So these are all the files on the local system. And we're in minimal. And there it is. Okay, so that's the page. That's kind of what I expected, right? Well, you don't know what I expected, but that article tag doesn't exist in IE6. So this is kind of the root of the problem. So how can you use the new semantic markup when not only this 10% of the world doesn't support it, but same with IE7 and 8? So there's a couple of techniques I want to show you, and I think this might be the crux of how we get around this problem. If I go back in and edit that file, I'm going to create a little bit of code here, some JavaScript. In fact, it's one line of code. document.createElementArticle. And hit refresh. So what do you think will happen? We get the box. So see that? That was all we had to do. I just added HTML5 to IE6. So what happens is that when the parser goes through and creates the DOM, it finds the article. It doesn't know what to do with it, so it's an orphaned. And when it tries to apply a style sheet, it can't find it in the DOM. So by creating that element ahead of time, it kind of puts it in. So for later reference, IE6, as it renders, it knows what to do with it. And this technique works for 6, 7, and 8. So this is the beginning of a technique which blossomed into this thing called the HTML5 shim and later became part of a project called Modernizer. So I'm going to replace that code with this Modernizer toolkit. Because I mean, what you don't want to do is go and create all the elements. For one thing, there's quite a bit of them. I couldn't remember where to park. I couldn't remember where the stuff was, so I created a bit.ly for it. So that's kind of what it's doing. So you can see the list of, this is what we will be doing. So we pull this in. And if I replace these three lines of code with that URL. Control V. So I removed my little hack. Now I'm bringing in the proper approach. And it still works there. And it should still work here on the desktop. IE6, please. God, good. OK. So Modernizer does that same trick. It kind of pre-populates the tags. So now you can go and style them. So you're with me so far. Right? So we can take the semantic elements and make them work. And I think this concept will probably be a way we go forward, not only for making the semantic elements work, but there's another trick to it as well. Let me show you that. So I'm going to use the audio tag. So we'll stick the audio tag down here. So audio, video, canvas, I mean, they all have the same kind of beginnings. It's just the audio tag. You specify the source of the MP3 you have. I have a source on here. Now, if you try to open this like I do most of the time, you don't see anything, so you think it's not working. That's just because by default, the audio tag doesn't render any controls. So if we go back in and add the flag controls, you get, let's see, well, maybe not, let's see, come on, controls, oh, I didn't write it, there we go, so let's play it, that works, cool. Okay, let's see, so what I want to do now is make audio work in IE6. So if I go back here and hit refresh, because remember we brought the Modernizer library in, it still doesn't work because I can't make that happen. In fact, what you would do at this point, because there's no way that's going to work, you can put in between this tag, the HTML inside here will be rendered in the case that you don't have that option or that codec in this case. So here we'd say install Flash. So we come back here, keep it in Windows R. So there, install Flash. So we're not going to be able to add the audio support. Now, where this starts to get tricky is if you have, I mean, that's fine, but the problem is that tag is still kind of around. And if you have, let's say I'll create a button that also adds, let's say, we'll add a play button and a pause button. And so on click, we'll set it equal to, I need to give this an ID, A1. And have A1 play. Let's see. 1, 2, da, and paste that in. And this one will pause. Okay. And that looks there. I forgot that. So these two buttons should trigger. Man, I better get that level of applause. Come on, for an href. Okay, so we have a play and pause button. Oops, yeah, that's still not going to work. Okay, that's part of the problem, right? So now I have controls that won't work on IE6 at all, and I now have markup for it. But back here, if I refresh, these guys work just fine. So we've seen what you can do with the semantic changes. Now, if we wrap this whole thing in a div tag, I'll call it my player. Give it a little spacing. What I'd like to have done is that player to go away if the audio is not supported. Thanks. Thank you. Why did I call it player? Okay, thanks for that. So the trick we're going to do, we're going to insert a class up here called Node.js, which means no JavaScript, which is really weird. Like, what is that going to do? If I save the file and go back and look at the source that's pulled down here, and in Chrome, bring up the developer tools, or F12 if you're on IE9. I don't think I saved it. Let me try it. So you can see the Node.js right there. This, I need to go a step beyond than this just Google code. For this, I'm going to bring in Modernizer. Modernizer. So Modernizer has similar concepts. Oh, by the way, did you see that? Watch. I can show this. This is cool. I don't want to use the mouse to click on a hyperlink, so I hit the letter F, and it highlights every link on the page. And I was looking right here at Modernizer, and so I can see it just says, now I'm in the combo box. It said AF, so I just type AF. I'm that lazy. I don't want to take my hands down the mouse pad. So Modernizer does the same thing that the HTML5 shim does, but does a few other tricks. It will take that node-js class and replace it with a word indicating every feature that's supported by that browser at that point in time. So there's a list of those classes. So let me include it. So I'm going to get rid of this. I have this. Let's see. So I have it under JS, libs, modernizer. Oh, man. So, boy, I'm not going to remember the name of it. Hold on one sec. JS, libs. Modernizer dash 1.7. Okay. Modernizer dash 1.7.min.js. So this is the minified version. So let's bring this page back up. Refresh. Now that Node.js, look what it got translated to. All those little tokens. So now it inserted all those tokens to say this browser does not, so you can see no CSS transforms 3D. Because that only is Mozilla right now in Firefox. But it does support video and audio, so I have little words for that. And the word audio is going to be in there too. But if it's not supported, it'll say no audio. And so that's the technique, that's the trick. So if I go back into my source code and create a style for no audio and attach it to player and have it only execute around the player style, I can set the display block display to none. So remember, sir, I won't save the file. I'll go back and show you. So we have this play and pause button. It says error on page. It doesn't work. But if I save this, and if I got it correct, and hit refresh here, God, I keep hitting Command R. It goes away. So the play and pause buttons are gone. Now the code is still there. It's just set to not to hidden. But that technique of detection through a library like Modernizer, or you can easily write your own JavaScript code to detect it. I like doing it this way because you can you do it with styles instead of JavaScript, but there's two ways to do it. I think we're going to be living with this technique for a while. I think it's the combination of these two pieces that will let us write HTML5 today. And it's low-level stuff, and it's going to be painful because you're going to take this, now you've got to go and test it with every permutation of the browsers, and you're not going to be able to add audio support, but at least you have a plan, you have a strategy. So when someone says, how do you code for HTML5 today when half the world, more than half the world, can't even support it, these would be two techniques to do it. Let me show you those links again, because those would be the ones to write down. So again, you have the HTML5 shim, which if you search for that, but this, it's relatively, it's not used so much anymore. People are using Modernizer because you also get the nice CSS tags. So there's Modernizer. Now I'm starting to see libraries of kind of a boilerplate websites that have this code baked into it, along with other techniques to fix, say, PNGs on IE6 don't work really well. Or there's other techniques for sniffing the browser and give you different style sheets for that. So what you're seeing is that the file new, the open web community is starting to build concepts around making it easier for us to develop here. So let me go back to my slides. And by the way, I'm not going to insult you guys with more. I mean, the video thing works just like that. You just replace audio with video, point it to an MOV file, or a fragmented, or an MPEG 3, or what is it? MPEG 4. Keep forgetting. VOG, Orbis. Yeah, there's no problems with video on the web. Check this out. So IE9 and Google, I'm sorry, Google said we're going to support H.264. And then they said we're not. So they're supporting a new format called WebM, but because IE is not going to support it, Google built a plugin for IE9 to play Google's video codec. IE9 built a codec to play H.264. And Mozilla's in the background going, we can't touch any of this stuff because it's against our charter. So the Microsoft has this I don't remember the name of the lab, but there's a group helping even push to Mozilla to try to get some kind of stability. All I know is we have to encode our videos four different ways. And that's still progressive video. That doesn't even give us smooth streaming, which is really great because you have random access seeking and you only download the bits that you need at the time in 2-second chunks. So the video space is crazy. It looks easy. It looks like, oh, it's just a nice little video tag. I don't even want to go there. That's a whole session on its own. In audio, it's tricky too. Let me go back to the slides here. Oh, that's awesome. I added a new slide. Okay. So since we only have an hour, I have got how much time left? Not much. Okay. So this is in the 3-hour format. there are obviously demos for all these. And you just search for HTML5 demo web fonts or WAF or storage or video, and you'll find it. But what you're not going to find is that strategy about looking at when a customer says, I want you to do HTML5, you say, what does HTML5 mean to you? Because it means a lot of different things to different people. And to some people, I've actually had a customer say, well, that's how I get my website to work on an iPad. Oh, okay. And so there's a lot of education you have to do around that. Then you have to cherry pick the features you need because maybe you don't care about audio and video. Canvas and SVG, two really interesting areas. Still kind of under a lot of hype there, but there are small animations that you can do with Canvas, or SVG is programmable. Canvas is the one you program with JavaScript, but there are libraries built on top of that. I'm actually most excited about the semantic markup, the use of web fonts, and CSS3. I think those, to me, are the big payoff for HTML5. They're not very developer kind of features. The developer features would be the local storage or some new form elements. If you're creating a site where you need to input a phone number, you can mark up that input now. An HTML5 mobile browser will pop up the nice little 10-key the numeric digits, which really helps when you have really poor eyesight like I do and you're trying to type your number in. But those are the major features. So this is a question I've asked over the past few months. And I want to ask, how many of you are actually basically getting paid to do this stuff today? Okay, this is the most I've seen. I see about 10 hands. And I've been talking to different groups for the past 6 months. I've never seen one hand, yet it's packed. So there's this incredible wave coming. There's obviously a lot of excitement. You now have seen techniques on how to do it. And this slide blew me away. This is the HTML5 job growth. This is an article from Wall Street Journal, and they got some data from, who was it? The job site was Dice, and it was I don't necessarily think the job market's 13, that's probably a misleading title, but the number of job posts went up by a factor of 13 in one quarter. So there's something going on here. Now, giving you a couple of the sites in which might help you start. These are the ones I mentioned earlier. If you are interested in learning more or doing more with Silverlight and HTML5, and we're not stopping Silverlight work. We have a ton of it, and it keeps coming in, and it will. I remember back to Mix 2 years ago when they announced Silverlight 3, and we did some work with for KEXP and out-of-browser support. I thought, this would be great for enterprise if you want to deploy apps or get some better kind of behind the firewall work. And it's still a big, big market, Silverlight for enterprise. The bottom line is HTML5 is kind of caught up to a lot of the things that we need Silverlight for. We need Silverlight to do, not Silverlight for. So now that it's caught up, I mean, you think of Silverlight as the pioneer. It's Daniel Boone making its way across the West. Well, the settlers and the farmers have kind of caught up. And Silverlight's being pushed further west, hopefully not into the ocean, but it's being pushed on, and we're seeing that now with Silverlight 5. And although you might not be able to do the consumer-facing websites that you would do in the past few years with Silverlight or Flash, because maybe the features will work in HTML5, there's still a big opportunity behind the firewall for enterprise corporate development, and we're having a lot of success there. If you're interested in both of these technologies, I have to give a plug, because we are hiring in all three states on the West Coast. you can follow me on Twitter. At some point, I'm going to have to change my Twitter handle from C# to JavaScript, because mark my words, you will be doing JavaScript in the future, not only in the client, but potentially the server side. So think about that. We have a lot to learn, HTML5, CSS, JavaScript, jQuery. And that's like the low-level machine language. You can go one level higher and use HAML, or Less, or Sass, or CoffeeScript. And that's like a level of abstraction above that kind of base layer of technology. It's really exciting and allows you to create HTML applications using languages to create them faster with more ease. So I hope that, again, I wasn't really out to convince you guys to do this, but I hope at least you've seen what I've been thinking about for the past year and how we at Vertigo are getting our heads around talking to our clients about HTML5. So I want to thank you guys for coming and letting you out early for lunch. And I will be around for questions, and we'll take them on the mic. But thank you very much. What's that? Lunch happened?
Yes.
Did you bring me lunch? Oh. Great, so I didn't get lunch. I guess, honestly, you know what I was probably supposed to do? Take questions and then dismiss the class. So, tell you what, let's actually, because there are a few people with questions, if you don't mind, take them there, and then that way it gets on the audio.
How does Modernizer handle CSS differences?
How does Modernizer handle CSS differences?
Or does it?
CSS implementation differences?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know, actually. That's a good question.
There's features, of course, in CSS 3 that aren't supported.
I know. Yeah. I don't know how granular it gets, but this, you have the source code for it. So you can go and see. But for like border radius,
yeah.
I mean, I suppose you can go in and see how what specific...
Does it do that, though, in fact?
I don't know, actually. I haven't gone at a level more granular than that. Let me see if I have my border radius thing. I have to show... This is really cool. Probably don't. No, I don't have it. Yeah,
okay.
Don't have an answer to that.
Thanks.
Sorry.
Hey, Scott.
Hey.
Let's say it was a couple years from now, most people had HTML5 capable browsers. Would you have done like the family.net or the Hard Rock thing in HTML5, or would you still
So what you're talking about, family.show, mm-hmm. that was a Windows application, and we wrote in WPF for genealogy.
Right.
And that one you could do with some of the... the idea behind that was just to exercise a lot of WPF features, right. and we happened to pick genealogy.
Yeah, I guess I'm not asking, could you do
but
it?
But could you? But, so that but, one you probably...
Would it be cost-effective to just... Do you think it would take more time to do HTML5 versus CivilLine?
Oh, it took us a long time to do the WPF one.
I can imagine.
Because we were
yeah.
learning it at the same time.
Right,
but,
yeah.
but I think that one you could do. The Hard Rock memorabilia, I mean, we get so much performance benefit with Silverlight in the
right.
way it's able to talk, but maybe eventually with the WebSocket API and how you could talk to the server. I don't want to say you can't, but I do know when it comes to deep zoom and image manipulation mm-hmm. or smooth streaming video in Silverlight, that's still, I think, untouched by HTML. But in terms of like doing some of the animations that we do, you can do great stuff with Canvas. So this is where we're going to earn our paycheck is by, because I can always say, well, it depends. And it always depends. And that's the job of the architect or the solutions architect to look at all the variables, like what kind of traffic do you get today? You know, if it's 10% IE6,
right.
Well, do you want to really tell your business client you're going to lose 10% of your customers?
Yeah.
But if it's really low, so you look at the logs, you look at the features, and then you budget a lot of time for testing, a lot more than you might have, say, for Silverlight, because you have to test all those browsers, and they're still moving targets, and then you have a fallback plan. So I think, in general, the testing gets more expensive, but I have a feeling with the speed, I mean, you've seen what IE9 can do now natively in mm-hmm. Windows. The speed is really there. So I think there'd be a lot of applications you could go back now and retrospectively look at Silverlight and say, yeah, we could do that in HTML5. But this is a real danger. I do see whenever there's a new technology wave, the engineers want to go back and redo with the new technology. And the business people don't really want to do that. They're right. just fine the way it is. Mm-hmm. So you look for opportunities to improve and try to get both at the same time. Like if you want to take a site and there's some new functionality that needs to be added, well, let's see if we can at least get the new doc type. You get some of the new semantics in. Or maybe there's one page that's isolated you could do in Canvas instead of Silverlight. I'm not saying Canvas is a substitute for Silverlight, but for basic animation, it could be.
Right. What do you think about development costs of having to train people to do now CSS, HTML, and JavaScript instead of XAML? And
it's a lot.
Yeah.
I couldn't do the link tag correctly.
Right.
There's very little tooling. And then on the design side, too, you got a lot to learn. It was already a tough learning curve going to Silverlight in the first place because we had to learn XAML. And XAML as a declarative markup, very as powerful as it is, it's XML, which is pretty wordy, and then we had to learn, and a lot of people like us, we were doing it before there was even a tool like Blend. And then Blend has a learning curve. And then layer on top of that, you had to learn MVVM. Well, on the web space, you still have to apply some of those like MVC patterns that the Ruby and Python world have been doing for a long time. So you still use some of the same patterns for web development, but you now CSS, HTML, and JavaScript, and jQuery. Just because you know jQuery doesn't mean you know JavaScript. Really recommend like Douglas Crockford's talk or some of his videos online, or he's got a really good book called The Good and the Bad Parts of JavaScript or something. But that's going to be a really important language to work with. But yeah, it's a big learning curve.
Thanks.
Sorry. That's why we're starting now, well and ahead of Windows 8. It's going to support IE10. So. Any other questions? Well, I'm going to go scrounge up a box lunch, but I'll be around for questions. Thanks, everyone.